This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 10th of November, 1953. The title of this lecture is SOP 8C Steps. This tape is 59 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape ends abruptly as did the original master recording.
And this is the afternoon, November the 10th. The afternoon of November the 10th. First hour's lecture. I want to take up this afternoon SOP8C, which I called before on these tapes clinical procedure. C merely standing for clinical use. Fast, easy way of using SOP8. Well, let's take up this subject of SOP8 by steps. Let's take up step one. How far does step one go? Step one goes any place that you can locate anybody at any communication level by telling him to locate where he isn't and then to be places. Positive and negative location. Its primary motive is precise location. Now, how a person does this, by thinkingness, beingness, feelingness, hiddenness, words, so forth, there's just an enormous multitude, you might say, of techniques which come out of this one principle. They are put down as they are in issue 16G with those steps, one after the other, so that a person without too much command of the actual technical background of this subject will be able to achieve results as he goes downstairs with these cases. But you can see that any such system is in itself only a communication system. And cases which are extremely difficult simply adore communication systems. And they will follow a communication system for a long distance. Well, be advised that every single step of SOP8 has as its fundamental motive the location of the center of energy unit of the individual, which is to say the individual in that sort of term. Let's not, amongst ourselves here, certainly pull any punches with regard to what we are doing. We have achieved, evidently for the first time in man's history, a precise location of the life unit of the person. And this nebulously in the past has been referred to by many names, but the best names which characterize it are, fortunately or unfortunately, the spirit or the human soul. These come closest to a definition of it. The unit which creates life energy is a precision definition, mathematical enough for our purposes, to be represented by a mathematical symbol. Now, we have taken the traditional symbol for life energy, and that happens to be theta. That's a traditional symbol in the Greek alphabet. It also happens to be a traditional mathematical symbol for static. So we've given it a mathematical name. Now, what has happened here actually is that we have given the human spirit or soul a mathematical name, Theta, and have defined its activity in the conquest of the physical universe, or, as it may be, the manufacture of that universe. And we have developed here and have at hand techniques which, in a short time or a long time, and in a relatively short time when very well understood and used, which actually isolate this unit and actually bring about a new condition for Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens has been told in the past consistently and continually that he must save his soul. This is certainly an inverted eighth remark if I ever heard of it. He is his soul. He's been told somehow or other that he must save then himself, which of course immediately implied that he himself must be in grave danger. So it told him immediately that there was something he must be afraid of, even though he didn't know what it was, so it was just fear that he was afraid of. And out of a vast tangle of Indian, early Egyptian, later types of religion, and even later Christian work, Mohammedanism, Buddhism, we unsnarl the only consistent line of investigation man has ever followed, the search for his own soul. So let's not be too quick to say what we are doing is science. That is actually a degradation of what we are doing, because science today does no longer mean truth. It means an examination of the materiality of existence. We're not examining the materiality of existence. Scientology is taken from seal, knowing in the fullest sense of the word, study of. And even that word doesn't embrace actually what we are doing. Now, if an auditor just simply realize this, with a crunch, so to speak, he will strip himself of an enormous amount of preconception and actually, in the public eye, explanation. You want to know what you're doing? The most startling remark I know. Well, we're finding people's souls and popping them out of their heads. You know, to suddenly move out of the field of psychology is no loss, because we've never been in the field of psychology, and everybody knows psychology is a failure, and that anybody who's studying his mind is nuts. With the announcement of Theta clearing, we actually ceased an investigation of the human mind and began an immediate and active investigation of that creative energy unit known to us as the Theta. If you think this got much to do with the mind, just look at some of the minds that are around. It doesn't have very much to do with the human mind beyond giving it the energy. So to say that you are working in the field of the human mind, it's just about the same way as saying you are working with the belts and lathes of the manufacturing plant when you're actually working with the atomic pile which makes the bombs or the fissionable material which runs the generators, which turns the belts, which turns the wheels. You see how far removed you as an auditor would have a definition if you consistently and continually said we're investigating thinking, or we're investigating the human mind. Now, if you keep on thinking of investigating the human mind, or that you're working with somebody's mind, you'll have a tendency to concentrate on what he's thinking. And SOP 8 is an effort mainly to discover where he is. Now, see, that doesn't have anything to do with things. And what you're rehabilitating is not his thinking or his brain. He's trying to rehabilitate his looking. Well, where do we go in man's history to find adequate precedent? The closest we can come to it is Hindu and later religious philosophy. We don't even cross tracks with it there. Well, we do to some degree. It's a very hard thing for us to make a system of education out of what we are doing, because what we are doing makes systems of education. We're dealing just a little bit too far toward A now, having left the third echelon utterly. We're dealing just a little bit too far toward A to give an immediate answer on what does this apply to. Now, you could say it applied to anything anybody was interested in. You'd be absolutely right. Paul says, what's a Scientology? What are you doing with that Scientology boy? You say, well, what are you interested in? Well, I don't know. I was box fire myself. Well, that's what it applies to. Yes, sir, it applies to box fighting. Do you know that we have a peculiar and particular interest on picking up boxers that have been knocked down and putting them back in rings again so that they can get knocked down some more? This, by the way, just at this moment, has become my main goal and interest in life, right at this moment. Well, that's the truth of it. That's what a Satan does. Now, what are we doing? Well, we're causing. As soon as we think we're affecting with a technique, we get in trouble. That's why the techniques, as they go on down through the steps, take longer and longer and longer. And the weakest of them is step four. The only reason step four is there is because the fellow is so concentrated on the nothingness of thinkingness that by running step four in brackets, you get some of this whipped out, and he feels that he can cease trying to understand long enough to be someplace. So we have a very immediate problem in explaining what we're doing. It was suggested to me the other day by a fellow Scott, real good sense. Fellow said, what we're doing is rehabilitating people's certainty by increasing their self-determinism. And that's pretty good then. That's good enough definition for almost anybody. If you want a public definition, there's a good definition for you. Just because you define it that way, don't lose sight of what you're doing. Back there in the 8th and 9th and 10th centuries, a bunch of fellows were around. There must have been a lot of Thetans there. They were having a good game. They got completely misplaced. They were from early track, and they suddenly landed on Earth on late track, and they had a picnic for themselves. They formed an organization known as the Magi. They were very active in the 8th, 9th, and 10th centuries. I remember that it took three of these boys back in the 1st century to come in and for the world to know for sure whether or not that really was a Christ child in the manger. Remember that? In other words, they were the seal of approval. They've been doing that ever since here on Earth to a slackening and lessening degree. So, we have the main data with which we're working actually lay above, slightly, lay above the strata of religion, lay in the field of religious philosophy more than anything else. So, you're way up above that strata. In the 8th, 9th, and 10th centuries, these boys codified what they were doing. Now, the only book I know of on the subject, and inaccurate as it may be, and as perfectly wild as it is written, and as perfectly horrible, these are the customary things to say about Aleister Crowley, as perfectly horrible as the Beast 666 was, and as much as his rivals hate him and his friends hate him, particularly now that he's dead, he put down all I know of as the working principles of this group as they were expressed at that end of the century. Later on, they became other things. And actually, the Scottish Rite is immediately descended from them. It's all we've got of it today, Masonry and the Scottish Rite. Fantastic, isn't it? You didn't know that, did you? Really runs undercover. Yeah, after the Catholic Church had bumped off the last of the Knights Templars Orientalis, a half a dozen, there were some 10th degree boys around, and maybe higher. But the highest they had was a 7th degree man. He hardly knew anything, but a few of these fellows, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th degrees, got out of there, and they called themselves the Knights of Malta. And a few more of them got out and got into this place and that, and a few more of them called themselves the King John's Hospitallers of Jerusalem. That's another group. These boys really did a dispersal. Well, all we hear of that organization now, actually, are the Knights Hospitallers. It's immediately traceable back, and they certainly were doing something different than the earlier boys. You see, they've already gotten real messed up. And today, in the most conservative office you ever saw in London, they operate a small unit that's okayed by the Queen and so forth. But another bigger group of them, and it's called John's, St. John's, Order of St. John's, I can't read the sign, it's foggy in London. Anyway, the other part of it, and most of the work involved in it, had gone undercover already, and they'd gotten up into Scotland, and gone home to Scotland. Some of the boys who had been Scotch, who had been down there. Crusades be damned. There wasn't even a wheel turning on the Crusades when these fellows were really operating. But these fellows got together, and they knocked together what was still known of the work, and they formed an order called Freemasonry. And this order spread all over the world. As a matter of fact, the United States dollar bill at this moment carries nothing but Masonic symbols. The pyramid, the eye, all of that, balderdash. I mean, because they're doing a real mock-up there. I mean, that thing is fabulous. But obverse. And it is today the obverse of the seal of the United States government. Strictly traceable to this group, straight on back, traceable to the Magi who okayed Christ. The only record of any type of magic that has floated on forward to us has been knocked together by Aleister Crowley in a book called, wild as it may seem, The Master Therium. There's only one fantastically strong admonition which rides through all of their work. Is know what effect you are trying to cause before you cause an effect. The only mistake anybody can ever make stems exactly from that. You've got to postulate your effect before you cause any. And when people don't do that, they become effects of their own cause. Frankenstein's monster, all wound up, starts walking down the road. They didn't mean to cause that monster exactly as he is, and so the error of the magician actually is what destroyed the magician. Today we have things called magicians. They do stage magic. And they write in their own books that hocus pocus was what caused magic back down through the centuries. There is no plainer statement that is utter balderdash in the language than those statements that stage magic today was the modus operandi used to create what was called magic 1,000 years ago. This earth was real wild for a while there, real wild. I got kind of knocked down, though. They got this pyramidal thing going up on Mars, the Between Lives area. I wouldn't say that the dollar bill symbolizes the Between Lives area or traces us back on this same core. There's the same gang. You understand? I didn't say that. And you can't accuse me of having said it. I've given you a little piece of history there that you can cross-check and run the track and look up in modern books and so forth, and you'll find out what I've said is easily integrated, very easily. The only lesson to be learned from those people is just that one. Cause. When you're going to be cause, know what kind of an effect you're trying to create. When you know what kind of an effect you're trying to create, you'll continue to be cause. When you don't postulate what kind of an effect you're going to create, but just go at it harum scarum, appetite over tin cup, you're like the chess player who moves on impulse. He gets up against the fellow who calmly postulates that he is going to win this game by doing so-and-so and then does it. An auditor finds himself re-stimulated only when he has disobeyed the primary rule of magic. He comes immediately under the axe for the second rule of magic when he fails to obey the first rule of magic. First rule is to know what effect you're trying to cause, and the second rule is don't be the effect of your own cause. And an auditor who knows what kind of an effect he's trying to cause is then not liable to become the effect of what he has caused. In other words, let's not be in the dark or close our eyes or duck around about what we're trying to do. We're trying to rehabilitate the human soul. All right. Trying to do more than that. You want up the track, we're just trying to rehabilitate this unit. And we go on up the track a little bit further than that. I hope none of you go up there very soon and do anything to the equipment that's lying around there, because, frankly, I lost a dollar bill in France, and I'm going back for it later in the spring. So, you get it all unmarked, I won't find it. And you see, that'd leave me with an engram. Now, therefore, with a standard operating procedure, we'd, in spite of all that preamble, we had better know what effect we're trying to cause. Evidently, the magician slipped up on this because he went helter-skelter. Well, let's not go helter-skelter just because we don't realize what we're trying to cause. We can cause anything with this, you understand? So we don't have to cause anything in particular with it. We don't have to root this science down one channel and say here and after, this science will apply only to clearing and putting in condition street sweepers for the city of Keokuk. It's what many people would love to do with it. They come around and they say, it's medicine. Hell no, I wouldn't get my hands dirty on what they call medicine today. Medicine? As far as psychiatry is concerned, I don't think it's a practice. I think it's a dramatization. So we're not doing anything about psychology. Actually, psychiatry, people who come to you and say we're bad off in our minds and so forth. Well, you know, you're actually just skipping the whole situation. If you only took care of the very ill, or the insane, or something like that. Boy, this is a real poor level of acceptance. Real poor. They're not going to do anything for the society. No darn things. But there are a lot of people who will do something for the society. And they're already able. They're hard to lay their hands on sometimes, but you can get to them. All right. When we lay out a standard operating procedure on these same lines, we'd certainly better know what we're trying to do with this standard operating procedure, huh? What we're trying to do with it is orient this life unit so thoroughly that it comes to life. That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're not trying to do anything else. We're not trying to improve its thinking, improve its concepts, or anything. The only reason we run anything like step four, the only reason, it's just because the fellow's so wound up in thinking that he gets stuck, see, on trying to understand. And then you just try to run trying to understand that, and you get a little line charge out and let it go at that. You realize that's silly, you see. And then he'll come up trying to understand something else. Well, in SOP 8, we have a list of things that you can run in a bracket. First, you waste them in a bracket. It doesn't say in the first issue of that, in a bracket. it's an error. Waste them in the bracket, accept them under duress. There's another one that can be put in there. Save them in a bracket. Desire them in a bracket and be curious about them in a bracket. And you would be real interested in how it works out, that list, how it works out nearly all possible human factors. Very curious how it does. Because by the time you've said curious about on several items, I notice nearly everybody just goes in for wasting and then they skip it. But on some of those items, wasting gladly, see, and then you get curious about it or desire it. Oh, no! You know, it's real bad. And you break down these various resistances. All right, this fellow's got an enormous amount of very fine postulates and agreements and concepts, and they've got his attention hung up all over the track, and so he can't locate himself because he's only using one erg of a billion erg potential on attention. See, he's so fixed on this item and that item and another item that he doesn't look around enough to find out where he is. He thinks he is being oriented by, let's say, sex, like the psychoanalyst. Or he thinks he is being oriented very gloriously by drugs, as the doctor. Or he thinks he's being oriented gorgeously by retirement, like almost the entire American working population. And he's so set on this that he lets other things go by the boards. Another thing is he doesn't know a few things. And one of the things he doesn't know is that work is desirable. He doesn't know that hiring somebody to do something for you was an effort to waste the physical universe what you should be wasting elsewhere. And he doesn't know what he's doing to a lot of things. But the only thing he's doing is orienting himself on nothing. And that step breaks him of the habit of orienting himself on actually nothing, which is flock postulates. And it just gunshots the devil out of postulates. By the way, if anybody here has actually run the whole list from wasting up through wasting, accepting, saving, desiring, and curious about, see, five of them, run the whole list, you only get a few words deep into that list. And some of the darndest things start showing up, such as the fact that the Thetan is not just curious about pain, he loves it. And he's got a waist pain and waist pain and waist pain and waist pain before he can have that sensation. You get somebody to waist pain, they'll say, oh yes, I can do that easily, and then they find out they can't waste a bit of it. Have a rock hurt, or have some dead bodies in the graveyard hurt, or something like that. These concepts wouldn't occur to them. They just sit there and they just agonize. They're in terrific pain, trying to waste some pain. Well, there's one way of getting a person out of using nothingness for anchor points. Nothingness doesn't appear in the list. The reason why nothingness doesn't appear in the list is because the name of the list is nothingness. It actually is an omission, but it's only the omission of the title of the list. This tries to get your Thetan over the tremendous push and tendency of fighting nothingness. And it cleans him up to a point where you will be able to function with him on further locations.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
So you got this preclear, and you go just so far with his case, and you got him exteriorized by this thing. He seems to bog all the time. You just don't quite understand why this guy keeps nosediving. Well, he's got the idea that so many things are something, which are actually nothing, that he does these tremendous nosedives at the least provocation.
You've got this girl, she's beautifully exteriorized, she's just in gorgeous condition, and then you just forget this step four, and you think you've gotten all the attention out that you could, till all of a sudden you recognize that she lets out this small screech each time she sees a newspaper story concerning rape or something like that. Anything sexual will take command. That's because the thing's got an awful lot of engrams. He doesn't turn up at all. Well, you're not trying to cut him loose from all these ridges. You're just trying to unfix his attention, because his attention itself has to be wasted. Actually, the list wastes attention throughout, because it's attention on nothingness. See, then he could come back and build a much better system for himself than the system he's been handed. I talked this morning, yesterday, about people laying in these circuits into other people. Well, how many circuits do you think?